If you're tired of arguing with strangers on the internet, try talking with one of them in real life.
Welcome to Back in America, the podcast.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode. I'm Josh Wagner, the podcast editor at Back in America, a podcast exploring American culture, beliefs, and identity. Over a year into the COVID-19 pandemic and Zoom University, there is a noticeable shift in quality education for today's youth. While it is a plain fact that there are fewer laptops in the world than human beings, the quality of education for unhoused Americans has been substantially worsened. In addition to global questions of COVID-19 spread and survival, these individuals also have to be concerned with the additional challenges of their safety, especially from peace officers, shelter, food, and education. To answer these questions, I'm joined by Marco Bellin, Isabel Wang, and Holly Zhang from a new charity called the Bridging Tech Charitable Fund, or Bridging Tech for short. They seek to reallocate laptops and educational resources to unhoused students during the pandemic. Featured on NBC Nightly, Bridging Tech works with businesses and individuals who might otherwise recycle their devices to bring them to a vulnerable population. Co-founders Margo and Isabel are rising seniors at Stanford, studying biology and symbolic systems respectively, while Holly serves as the Foundation Relations Manager. Welcome to Back in America, guys.
Hi, thank you so much for having us.
Before we get too far into it, can each of you just tell us like where you are in the world and how this crazy pandemic year has been for you?
Currently, I'm in Cleveland, Ohio. I grew up here, and I actually took a leave of absence this year. So usually I'd be in school. I would have been a senior at Stanford. But now, because I'm on a leave of absence, I'm doing Bridging Tech full-time and then also spending more time with family. I've learned how to really, truly cook this year, which is wonderful.
This COVID year has been a pretty unusual and exciting one. I think that though we missed out on part of the senior year experience at Stanford, I feel like I've been able to spend time with friends in different ways. So I'm currently in Montana and I've bounced around different places this year and I'm currently wrapping up my senior year and I just finished my major and have been working on Bridging Tech alongside all of that this year.
Currently, I am in New Mexico, but I live in West Philly, where most of my family is. And I've just been spending these past couple months, 1 month in Arkansas for mountain biking, and here in New Mexico, I'm just enjoying the outdoors and the sunshine.
I guess my first question is, like, what is Bridging Tech? How did you get the idea? What inspired you?
Isabel and I lived in Outdoor House together, which is a residential community at Stanford our sophomore year. And that's where we got to know each other and learn about our respective interests in social justice and social equity. And before the pandemic, I was volunteering at a homeless shelter in Palo Alto focused on women's housing. And there I witnessed firsthand the digital divide, because when COVID shut down a lot of the stores and restaurants that these women would go to use the internet, they weren't able to go anymore, and they weren't able to search on their phones and use their phones and connect it to their professional workplaces. So that is where I was seeing the digital divide, and alongside Isabel was discovering the importance of educational inequity during COVID-19 along her own path in research.
Everyone at Bridging Tech is passionate about social justice and educational equity, and that's where we all come together to make a difference with Bridging Tech. So for me, my personal story is I grew up working on race relations initiatives as one of the only Asian students in my community. Through my focus on race relations, I found my passion for social justice. And through all of these experiences, I realized that one of the most important ways to make a difference is through educational equity, because educational equity will lead to social justice. So when I went to Stanford, I got more involved with technology and with education research. And for me, all of this came together very succinctly with the digital divide, because when COVID hit, we realized that students without devices would be left behind or forgotten about. And so we needed to make a difference really quickly. So we created Bridging Tech, and our mission is to bridge the digital divide and empower students affected by homelessness by providing technology along with educational opportunities. And I'd love to hear also about how Holly became involved in Bridging Tech because she is also just as passionate about social justice.
Well, currently I work as a technical project manager in a civic tech space, but I do have a sort of background in community organizing. I was an organizing fellow with the Obama campaign when I was in high school, so that sort of jump-started my experience with that. But I think going back to my roots as a child of refugees, I think a lot of that ties into my lived experiences as being a child of refugees, but just the challenges of navigating the system with language and culture barriers and just no community support. And, you know, my parents were fleeing from genocide and war, and then, you know, they met in West Philly. And so not having a community and a social network is something that I found growing up to have, in retrospect, have been barriers for a lot of people.
Yeah, one emphasis that you guys have is on laptops, but there are, I think, as Isabella was saying, there's all these other areas that create inequities. Could you talk about some of the maybe the less obvious ones? So like what other underlying inequalities have like come to light aren't as obvious?
We say that we are bridging the digital divide. So there are many steps to tackling that issue. And the first is, of course, with hardware donations. We send out laptops and we provide these amazing refurbished touchscreen laptops through our refurbishing partnership with C2K, Computer to Kids. Basically, we accept all kinds of contributions. They can be monetary donations, they can be device donations. If they're device donations, we can wipe them of data, refurbish them, and then get laptops back out into the community. So the first step is, you know, laptops and hardware. The second step is, of course, internet access. And we're working on partnerships with other organizations to make sure that when we get laptops out there, they can be used and you can connect to the internet. The third step is, of course, digital literacy. And that's something that we tend to really try to focus on because of our focus on children's education as a whole. And so with digital literacy, we partner with different academic partners, try to create these amazing programs for our students so that they can learn about coding or they can learn about making sure they're using their device to the fullest. And then also all of these other academic opportunities that relate to that. And then the fourth is we're also trying to create a social movement surrounding the digital divide. We're trying to make sure people are aware of this issue because I think that COVID exacerbated these prevalent inequities and showed us what we really do need to work on. And it's important that even after COVID is over, we're still continuing to focus on this because it's not going away. Technology in education is going to continue to grow. And when students don't have technology access, that's when they can be left behind again, which we want to prevent. So that's in general how we are trying to bridge the digital divide. We're also getting involved in policy advocacy, trying to create a movement to reduce costs or improve technology access spending. And then beyond that, I would love it if Holly, if Margot, you all wanted to talk about our mentorship and tutoring programs, because those are so close to our heart and what we're really focusing on building right now.
Our tutoring and mentorship programs really are intended to tackle education from a holistic standpoint. We understand that computers give students the opportunity to log on to class, but besides that, they still don't have the same support network as other students in more privileged circumstances might have. We recognize that kids growing up in the Silicon Valley in affluent neighborhoods have their parents' connections, their parents' friends' connections, and that entire network from a young age that will enable them to better get the resources to apply to college and then apply to jobs. And there really is this inherited opportunity. And so our mentorship program really is intended to serve students with both college student mentors who can advise on what might be the best path for them, what it was like for them to go through the college application process, provide more direct support. And then we also have more professional mentors in the community who have volunteered their time to Bridging Tech to offer insight on what it might be like to pursue different career paths. And we offer a variety of career mentorship, whether that be more trade school profession. We really want to emphasize a diversity of careers in that front. Just to tack onto that, our tutoring program is more intended to help with direct academic success. So figuring out how we can best support students through the COVID academic year and after COVID, tutoring services that are free are still going to be useful to the kids affected by homelessness that we serve. And alongside that, we've been creating an educational platform to make these services accessible to students, which I would love Holly to talk more about.
Yeah, so right, I think laptop donations address the most immediate need, but I do believe it's only the first step in tackling inequity. So I think the cause is the lack of opportunity and social mobility. And then we can talk more about our complete community platform later, but it's supposed to be building a pipeline to build brighter futures for those lacking access to resources and social networks. I can tell a bit more about how I know when my parents came here, you know, it's different for those who were sort of born into this sort of inherited wealth and social networks, but just not knowing anybody, not knowing how to navigate this sort of system. My parents have worked 12 hours a day, and they know, of course, education is important, but they don't know the resources and how to help their own children with that. And with language barriers and as well, so as an English language learner, I had to sort of navigate that, and not knowing how to ask for help or access those resources. It was definitely a challenge because it was just all my, instead of like asking for input from people like, oh, like, what do you think about college education or college apps? It was something I did all on my own. And I think if I had had the sort of mentorship and support network and exposure to things, like even in undergrad, I didn't know anything outside of academia. I didn't know people who worked in different sectors. So I couldn't explore interests even outside of college and getting the first job. I don't know how to really say this succinctly, but it's just so hard not to know what you don't know. And then to even take that huge effort to even go ask for help is quite a big leap. And so I would love to create this sort of supportive community where we can sort of foster that creativity and curiosity among students from a young age to make them feel like they're not alone and that they have a supportive network.
I'm actually a little curious about like who you serve. You're talking about like you serve unhoused people through shelters. Can you just try to like demystify who what people are, who you're helping?
So Bridging Tech really wants to serve housing insecure people. So anybody who may identify as houseless or housing instable, we want to help. And so the principal way we identify these students K through 12 affected by homelessness is through the shelter system in the US. So we will contact shelters in cities across the country based on where we think we should be expanding. And they will give us the numbers of laptops that they need for their students. And that's how we provide the computers. However, there are other ways through which we can identify students affected by homelessness. So different nonprofit organizations, like the Boys and Girls Club, for example, works with underprivileged youth, and they're able to identify housing instable students that we serve. In addition, school districts, we have not worked with in the past, but there are countless kids in housing insecure situations that are attending school, but may not be living in a shelter system or in a house, and so may not be identified through the traditional ways that we find students. And so that those are all the different avenues in which, you know, housing instable people might, or through which we identify housing instable students.
In some way, do you think that Bridging Tech and charities like Bridging Tech like almost allow the government to not have to make these reforms or policy changes because you exist and you're filling the gap? So why would you need anything else?
Well, I think fundamentally that that is something embedded within the American system. We pay less taxes than other countries, and as a result, we have less of a social safety net than other countries have. And that works because we have a giant philanthropic sector that is fueled by major American donors and can provide the funds for social resources for the most under-resourced people in our country. I'm not sure that a small nonprofit like Bridging Tech necessarily is influencing the way the government attacks this issue, but I think that there is a systemic, or just the balance between the philanthropic sector and the government is something that is very historically founded, and there's a lot more that needs to change before that dynamic is shifted in any way.
I also think that when we talk about nonprofits and governments working together, I think that it's important policymakers and people in government aren't trying to rely on nonprofits. I think that the conversation should actually be flipped. You know, we shouldn't even be considering that government is relying on nonprofits to do the work for them. So I think that nonprofits, in a way, serve to potentially bring together communities to solve additional issues that come up. And I think no matter what, it will be a positive, even if the government were to solve this issue and, you know, Bridging Tech wouldn't necessarily have to bridge the digital divide anymore. It's still really important that we're bringing together the community. And that's why we're actually working on policy advocacy. We can bring together the community and try to change these issues from the ground up.
Yeah, I wish we didn't have to exist.
Yes, I love the answer. Because it seems like through Bridging Tech, you're trying to imagine a possible future that we all would want to inhabit. It's a great way to frame that. that question. And almost all that, it's a weird thought to have, but I love that. That's how you, I love that you said that. And so almost on that note, like, what's been like the biggest or one of the biggest challenges or surprises you've faced along this winding path?
One of the surprises that I encountered was, and I think that, you know, Margot and Holly encountered the same thing. We realized that one of our main roadblocks, one of our main issues is actually just increasing awareness about the digital divide. Because what we've learned throughout all of this is that people really want to help. If they learn about this issue and they learn that Bridging Tech is doing all of this to solve this issue and help bridge the digital divide, they very quickly get involved. You know, we have 150 volunteers all over the place. We have 1,000 plus device donation pledges. We have contributions coming in all of the time, but it's because that they learn about the digital divide and people want to help out. So what I realized is it's really important just to get the word out there. You know, share what you learn about the digital divide, share what you learn about all social justice issues, and try to educate, I would say, those around you about these issues that can be solved.
So what we found is that the digital divide is a gigantic issue, and there is absolutely no way that a small organization like us can cure this issue overnight. And so we've learned that there are a lot of other nonprofits that are working on Wi-Fi or that are working on refurbishing and working on digital literacy. And what we can do is collaborate with these other organizations to provide a holistic package to the students we serve while remaining our focus and maintaining our focus on devices and hardware.
Yeah, and following up on that, are there any organizations that you found to be doing really amazing work that are under-known about?
First, I'll mention C2K. C2K is our national refurbishing partner. They help us by wiping our donated devices, refurbishing them, and then shipping them out. But they also, because of our partnership, they also include headphones in all of our laptop shipments. So when we provide free laptops to the students we serve, they also receive headphones because in many cases, their environment may be noisy, it may be hard to concentrate. And so it's really important that they do have these extra accessories that really improve their learning. But beyond that, I think that there are just so many incredible organizations. When you think about the students we're serving and, you know, their needs and how can we give them space to really thrive in education? There are so many ways in which we can combat that. So right now, I think I mentioned before, we're trying to create some other, maybe I didn't, but we're trying to create some mental health or other kinds of health partnerships because we want to make sure that when our students go to school and when they attend their education, that they are completely focused. They don't necessarily have to worry on other things going on around them, whether that is like food insecurity or anything else. Some other organizations that I really appreciate are those that somehow link lawyers to, or pro bono lawyers to under-resourced communities. So again, I think that just removes a barrier to the students we serve, to their families, and allows them to actually focus on their education and work on themselves and their knowledge rather than on these external issues.
And so one organization I'd love to highlight, we are not partnered with them yet, but hope to be in the future. I personally volunteer as a TA, but they're called Tech Girls, and their mission is to empower girls to be future technology leaders. And they inspire middle school girls to explore the possibilities of technology. They have these free and fun workshops led by, you know, industry professionals, leaders, students, and they share these the free workshop curriculum of companies and schools and other organizations and make it available for anybody. I think it's 20 countries now, number of countries that Techers curriculum has been taught. But it's just been wonderful to have this early exposure and just to be exposed to the fact that tech doesn't necessarily mean, you know, you're just coding in your basement. And there's just like a whole world of possibilities. And on a personal end, I didn't know anything about programming to after college, to after undergrad. I thought when I was in middle school, high school, that this is not for me. This is not, STEM is not for me. And then I sort of changed my mind in my early 20s.
I guess my other question is about like your future vision for Bridging Tech. So I assume you have some milestones throughout the rest of the year, through the next phase of the pandemic, but as people are having access to vaccines, what's your like long-term 3, 5, 10-year vision for Bridging Tech? You hope to, if you have one, what's on your mind, what you hope to accomplish?
I think that the most important thing, and there are so many things we're trying to accomplish, but I'll just list this. If the time span were forever, we are hoping to get connected and reach out to every single student affected by homelessness in the country and make sure that we have bridged the digital divide for them. So that is making sure that they have a device to use, making sure that they can access programs through the internet, making sure that they have the educational resources to use technology to the fullest. That is our major, major goal. So I just want to put that out there. And by the way, I am really glad that Holly mentioned that she is spanning different teams, because something that is really cool about Bridging Tech is when you join our team, you have the opportunity to work on whatever you're most passionate about and whatever drives you. We really care about that and focus on that. Yeah, I'd love it if you all also shared other parts of our long-term goal, because, you know, we're continuing to shape our long-term vision, and this is something that's really important to us. And Margo and I talk about this maybe every day or every other day.
Yeah, so I think one other question in my mind is like this, the conversation surrounding like going back to school versus continuing on Zoom high school, Zoom university for another year. I'm curious whether Bridging Tech has any like thoughts on that, or maybe how would being in person change your priorities or what you guys are working on?
What we have realized when actually figuring out, oh, what is the next step when the pandemic is over, is that our mission really doesn't change much because of what I told you earlier. Students need laptops. I mean, when you think about having to maybe write an essay out by hand or go to the library or to a computer lab just to work on your homework, whereas some students have a laptop at home, have, you know, iPads, have all kinds of things that they can use at home to complete their schoolwork, there is a clear disparity there. And that's not going away once the pandemic is over. And what we've actually realized is that even our system right now of choosing which students to give laptops to or which shelters to work with first, that doesn't change either, because our focus is making sure that students that don't have loaner laptops whatsoever get those laptops first. And that was our priority during COVID, because students without access to a device weren't going to school. They were either not going to school because their parents just couldn't deal with trying to get them online without having a device and not being able to access the library, or they were trying to use their parents' smartphones to attend school. So we realized that those students affected by homelessness were those who needed the laptops most. And so we prioritized getting laptops out to them first. Now, when the pandemic is over, we're still prioritizing those students first, because some students do get loaner laptops from their school districts. Other school districts don't give them out, or other students have not received them. And those without devices have the greatest need for the laptops we give out. So that doesn't change whatsoever. And then our focus on building education, of course, doesn't change either. We are continuing to research these issues and continuing to learn more about education and maybe education technology. So of course, that's going to morph a little bit as more comes out. But that's just an effect of time. And we hope to continue to grow, actually, in terms of our education. So hopefully those will improve as well.
Yeah, and I'm also just wondering, how can listeners at home get involved? What do you need?
We need so much help from anybody who is willing to join our cause and try to bridge the digital divide. First, people can get involved by hosting their own technology donation drive. If you have time, if you can reach out to some local community organization, tell us that you can do this. And all you have to do is, you know, collect people's devices as they bring them to you, and then we'll work with you to ship them off to a refurbisher. So if you can host your own local technology donation drive, that is wonderful. If you can also volunteer in any other way related to the tech drives, or related to grant writing or advice for marketing or anything that can help us as a nonprofit, both of those, you can go to our website and contact us. We have a contact page. We also have a get involved page. Feel free to check both of those out. And then beyond that, we could always use as much support as possible. So if you can give a monetary donation, every $100 you give goes to improving the life of another student affected by homelessness and transforming their lives because we're giving them access to technology. And then beyond that, if you work at a company or if you own a company, it would be wonderful if you could work with us and try to give us your hardware refresh donations. We know that there are so many devices out there. Many times they just go to e-waste. So we can wipe all of the data off of your devices, refurbish them, and actually get them back out into the community, into the hands of students who really need them and who really deserve them.
One question that's been on my mind, and I think I asked a version of this earlier, is that like who your actual like target audience is. So it's obviously you're helping unhoused people oftentimes through shelters, but I'd love to hear more about like, have you had any like personal interactions with the people you're helping?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I think that what we would love to do actually once the pandemic is over is potentially create events in which people can meet the students that we're serving. And this may not come to fruition. It may come to fruition, but I think that that would just be a wonderful way for people to actually understand firsthand from the students we serve how technology truly impacts their lives. But even if we don't host that kind of event, because there are other issues related to hosting that kind of event, I think that we always really appreciate testimonials from the students we serve. And what we learn is that technology is so crucial to students' education. Technology is so crucial for so many reasons. The first is, of course, getting an education. And right now during the pandemic, it's getting online and getting into classes. But then there's also this other aspect of our devices that people continue to tell us about. And that is this idea of social connectedness. And that's something that you don't necessarily see from the get-go with Bridging Tech. But when we give laptops, our students always come back to us and say, like, thank you so much. I can go to class now, but I can also talk to my friends and I can also reach out to my family. And so technology, as you can see, is becoming so important in the world in terms of connectedness, in terms of just getting involved in your communities. And so we are really grateful to hear these kinds of testimonials and know that our laptops really are making a difference in students' lives.
This is like, might be a hard question, but like, how do you do that? Like, I definitely have like family friends who are very like adamant, like, you know, if you're in house, you're like lazy or like you should go to school or like, and how do you convince someone who has that belief that they're wrong? It's about the social structure. It's about the position you're in, that no, it's not your fault that you're born into a non-privileged background. And I personally have no idea how to have the conversation, and I failed many times, which is why I'm asking you to.
So I do believe there is this social stigma that is readily apparent when people think of youth affected by homelessness, and their stories and situations are very personal and on a case-by-case basis, and it's not something I can I would share for that. But I do hope, as what Isabel said about social connectedness, is just maybe humanizing the people's situations, and not because, oh, it's like the individual's fault, it's this person's own it's because of this person's actions that led to this, and sort of recognizing more of the social structures in play, and it goes back to inequities, and not blaming, a child for their situation.
These conversations are really hard to have. It's part of like what I think you're getting at. Like the language that we have to talk about socioeconomic status and other things doesn't really exist, or it feels very like, bureaucratic and not like unreal. And yeah, and so that's like a issue that I don't know what to deal with either.
Right. I mean, I guess it's hard to ask someone to have compassion and empathy. I mean, at some point, it's on that. The onus is on that person. And, I could talk until I'm blue and maybe even share my story, but hopefully not have access to prop. And even then, they'll just come up with whatever justification they possibly can. And so I, on a personal level, sometimes I'm like, I don't have the mental energy and capacity to do this, and it doesn't have to be on me. Not the answer you want to, Josh, but I guess in light of, gesturing at everything that's going on, it's sort of like, it doesn't all have to be on me to try to inform and educate people on their bigotry.
If you can actually hear a direct story from someone's experiences, I think that makes a world of a difference. That's why there are so many, back when I held community forums about race relations and all of that, we would want to make sure that people were speaking from their own experiences. That way people could empathize. And I think that when you have somebody speaking to you directly about their lived experience, your empathy naturally comes out. And so that's why I think that those kinds of storytelling opportunities are really important. That's actually something that we're trying to do with Bridging Tech soon. In terms of our social media or our communications, we're trying to feature more direct stories about the people we serve or about anybody who has been affected by homelessness. Because when you hear stories from people, you realize the human side to things.
I've honestly never shared my own experiences like this to anybody before, just because there was no reason to, right? And so I don't want to, like, I guess it goes back to the idea of, like, charity, and like, no one wants to be seen as a charity case, right? No one wants to feel pity in a sense. And I don't have pity for myself as a child. It's just, I think of it as, oh, this is good learning experiences, builds character and all of that. But I don't know if there's something that I could speak to my experiences that would help people, the audience, understand. I guess I could do that. it's not something I'm used to. So I don't have anything. Yeah, I mean, I just remember Josh, like, only as, like, in high school was I, like, realizing that, yeah, like I said, like, people actually pay for tutoring, people pay for, like, SAT prep, or, like, people's parents write their own, like, their own children's college applications, or, like, they do their homework for them. And, like, I've never received any of that. So that was a huge shock for me. But I also grew up in the suburban, very white, middle-class community. And, like, I'm coming from, like, a blue-collar working class, you know, immigrant family. And so I was already very keenly aware from a young age of those differences, but it wasn't something that I felt like I had to hold myself back. It was just more so I didn't know how to ask for assistance or look for resources. And, you know, I can Google so much, like, you know, and there, but but as far as actually understanding colleges and what I wanted, I never asked anyone, like, what do you think I should do when I grow up? It was just more like, well, I'll just pick this major and we'll see how that goes.
So I just have one last question for you, which is the question that everyone gets asked on this program, which people have said is kind of hard. But it's, what is America to you?
When you ask, like, what is America, my first thought was white supremacy. But again, that's a little bit, that's alienating the audience, I guess, right? And it's hard because people do feel disassociated from, you know, America, the country, because it's just about their own community. And when we say things like all politics is local, they just think about their own community and what directly affects them. And yeah, I don't know. I guess because I'm in New Mexico right now, I'm just thinking, like, wow, this is so different from Philly and everyone. But I think it boils down to that we all have these basic needs and we just fundamentally disagree on on how to achieve them. And it's not united. It's messy. But yeah, I don't know. I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
So to me, America is community. And when I say community, I mean we are all as individuals searching for people who understand us and who will work together with us to solve problems or who will be there to support us when we are in times of need. To me, America is really about reaching out to people and trying to find your own space and trying to reach your goals with the support system that you have. So for me, it's really about the people. I think that people here and what America is this search for belonging.
Thank you so much for taking out and talking today. It's been really amazing. I learned a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.